All right. Welcome back to Matchroom Radio with David Diamante. That is me. I am your host, and I am we're in Leeds, England. It's a very vibrant city here in West Yorkshire, England. And I've got a wonderful guest with me. I'm really excited to have her. She is part of a very elite boxing club, one of the undisputed champions of the world, Jessica Caskilla McCaskill. Yeah. It's great to see you, Jess.
Yeah, it's good to be here. Always good to see you, David.
Yeah, you too. It's been a while since you've been in the UK. I mean, am I right that it was the Katie Taylor fight?
Yep, 2017.
Your call.
Mm-hmm.
What a fight.
East London, yeah.
What a fight. What a place.
Yeah, it was pretty cool to see just, you know, different lifestyle. And I mean, driving on the other side of the car, other side of the road, crossing the street, all that stuff is very different. And it's funny, I was just telling Rick that I had saved some of my euros because I was like, I'm going to come back one day. And then I ended up paying for parking in Chicago, so I don't have it anymore. But yeah, I knew I was going to come back.
But they don't use euros here. They use GBP, pounds, baby. Great British pounds.
I've been having people been asking me for all kind of money, so maybe I'm...
But look, I'll take euros. Yeah, I'll take, if you got euros, we'll take them.
Yeah.
Drachma, shekels, francs, it doesn't matter. Shells, chickens, whatever you got, we'll take it. Great. Yeah, this city, this is a great city, and obviously the people are very spirited. Mm-hmm. I think we're going to see an incredible fight on Saturday night. And when I say that, I'm not just talking about one specific fight because there's a whole card.
Right.
But I think just the atmosphere at Headingley is going to be insane. And this city, it's like got all these like things that it claims, like first steam engine, first locomotive is from here. The UK's first ISP, internet service provider, I guess, is from here. And they claim to have that the mousetrap is from here. But actually, it's not.
Okay.
Do you know where it's from?
No, I don't.
Illinois.
Illinois. Where all the rats are.
No, well, it's not Chicago, but it is Illinois. Okay. Abingdon. Okay. It's like west Illinois.
Okay.
So you grew up in southern Illinois, like really close to St. Louis, right? Just basically St. Louis.
Yes.
Yeah.
Across the river, and went to college, and then after college I moved to St. Louis. So that's definitely like my grassroots right in that area.
St. Louis. Mm-hmm. But you rep Chicago. I mean, I know you live there now.
Yeah. Chicago has adopted me as one of their own. I just threw out the first pitch at the Sox game. And, you know, Chicago has just been so welcoming. And I represent them. And I fight there. I fought at Wintrust twice. And, you know, if they're going to accept me, I'm going to accept them back. So I don't have a problem with that.
I was there. And I was lucky enough, fortunate enough to call both those fights.
Yep.
And they were both super exciting.
It was electrifying, right? Like all the fans and people representing. And that's what it's going to be like on Saturday, I'm sure.
So wait, so hold on, because we got some things to talk about here.
Okay.
So you just threw out the game at the first game at the Sox.
Mm-hmm.
But you're a Cardinals fan, aren't you?
I am. I appreciate you recognizing
Yo,
that.
Yo, you're a St. Louis Cardinals fan.
I am. I think the only thing I wouldn't do is throw out at the Cubs just because I was born and raised to hate the Cubs. Like,
right.
I had a lot of Cubs fans there supporting me at the Sox game when I threw out the first pitch. And, you know, loyalty is everything. So, you know, I welcome all walks of life, you know. But Cardinals, that's just where I was born and raised. And so they always have a special place. But the Sox, that they asked me to come. So, you know,
You're not going to say no.
Right. Thank you to Rick. And he organized that for me, my trainer and manager, Rick Ramos. And it's just another solidifying moment that, you know, I do represent Chicago, and Chicago also represents me.
Yeah. And St. Louis, look, the Cardinals, great team, mm-hmm. great team, great franchise. They're mm-hmm. one of the oldest in baseball.
Yeah.
11 world championships, second only to the Yankees. Thank you. 27 world championships.
Yeah. They earned it. Yeah.
Just got to put that in there. But anyway, I have different allegiances in baseball. I like different teams, but I do love the Yankees. So, but that's great. So yeah. So, but you did skip over a whole lot of stuff, which hopefully we're going to get into some of that now, but can we just talk for a second? Cause what's really, so you're, first of all, you're here this week cause you're not fighting on this card,
right?
But you're here as a commentator.
Are
you a part of the broadcast team?
I originally came. Rick said, you know, we gotta jump in front of this whole thing and just really kind of take charge of my career path because, you know, we're trying to figure out what to do next since about April, and we haven't really gotten any kind of information from anyone since April. And, you know, I like to fight. I like to stay busy. I'm trying to, you know, do as much as I can for boxing. And I don't like to just sit on my hands. So we came out here to get some answers, to figure out what's next, to network with a couple people, a couple boxers, you know, stay in front of the media. And then along the lines of letting people know where we were going to be, we were asked to be a part of the broadcast, and we were asked to, you know, come on your podcast. Thank you. And interviews and fans coming to the lobby. And so we're just trying to do as much as we can while we're here.
So you're talking about, for the fans out there, and you mentioned his name a few times now, but you said his last name, Rick Ramos. He's right off camera right here.
Yeah.
Big shout out to Rick. He's a great guy. He really, I'm not saying it because he's right there. He really is. I really dig Rick. Body Shot Gym.
Yes.
Right. It's not where you started boxing, but it's where you box now.
Right.
And you've been with Rick for quite a long time now. Yeah.
Yeah. Almost nine-ish years. Yeah. Ever since I came to Chicago, 2012, I was looking for a gym, and he was the only person that took me serious and actually responded.
But there's a reason for that, right? Because you came into the gym and you knocked out one of his best fighters. This girl that had just won the Golden Gloves, yeah?
Yeah.
And you went in and you just dropped her with a body shot.
I did.
And Rick was like, well, who's this?
Yes.
let me pay attention.
The progress before that, the whole process was really kind of just time consuming and frustrating. And, you know, I just kind of kept working out on my own. And then once he welcomed me in, it felt like every second of every day was an interview.
Yeah, it was just going.
Yeah. Yeah. So I took as much advantage of what I could of that moment, and he put me in for sparring, and I was like, here we go.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah.
And you really do love to fight. I know you do, because I've seen it.
Yeah.
People that haven't seen your fights, they need to go back and watch these fights, especially those Wintrust Arena fights. Mm-hmm. Man. Yeah, like, you've been in some brawls. I mean, that's your original style, right? You call yourself a brawler.
Yes.
And you are a brawler. And it's funny, because I've heard you tell other girls, you're like, look, the moment, you know, I know she's been doing this, and like you were talking about with Cecilia Brackhus. Uh-huh. You're like, okay, yeah, she's this and that, but the moment she gets hit, she's gonna revert back. And it's almost like you do the same thing. Like,
yes.
I know you, like, you've been working on the boxing with Rick and doing all this mm-hmm. kind of stuff, but when push comes to shove,
I'll be doing the pushing and I'll be doing the shove.
You start throwing them dogs.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, it seems to work, and a lot of people don't understand how much power I have. And Rick has always said that I don't translate well over tape, which is fine. That's kind of like a good thing for me. And when they feel that power, they kind of go to plan B, and there's holding and there's points taken away and a lot of running going on. So that's kind of the solidifying moment of like, yeah, she does have power. Yeah, she is a challenge.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, man, what a landscape right now in the women's boxing world. We'll get into that in a second, but I mean, look, I know one of the massive, you've got two defeats on your career. One was like your second or third fight.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know. Is that girl still fighting?
Mm-mm.
Yeah. But the other one was Katie Taylor.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you would love to avenge that loss.
Yeah. I mean, I would love to. I don't really know what the plan is. It seems like she's kind of coasting out the rest of her career, and they're just kind of like looking for mandatories, and they know I'm here and ready, and they don't take that advantage. And so it just seems like she's not as healthy as they say she is, or she's not as raring to go. And she's just kind of, you know, taking some time off and may just end her career altogether, you know, sooner than later. That's just what it seems like from the outside in.
Did you watch the Amanda Serrano fight the other day?
Those fights are so late. I go to bed early. I saw a piece of it.
Dude, okay, I'm sorry to interrupt you on your own answer, but no doubt you go to bed early. I was going to ask you that. Like, yeah. First of all, do you still do this regimen where you wake up at dark 30 mm-hmm. and start running? And 4 a.m., you're out, like, you're eating your little toast and your little coffee, and you're running, and you out
let
doing.
Let the dog out.
And then you go to work, and then you still.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's just the schedule for me is just helpful. I don't have to think about it. I just do this. And then, you know, it's all organized for me. So it's just, and once you get used to it, it's just easy to continue to follow. So
Sure. What time do you usually go to bed?
I would love to be in bed by 8:30. That is great for me.
Rick's like, yes. 8:30, you're in bed.
Yeah.
I see Rick looking over. He's like, that's right.
Yeah, curfew, right?
Yeah.
And then up by 3:30, sometimes 3, just to get my morning started and stay on top of things. And first workout is at 4:45.
So, God, there's so much I want to ask you and talk about. I'm not sure which way to go with it just right now. I want to talk about first Serrano and Katie Taylor, because they seem to be on somewhat of a collision course.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they're going to fight. I don't know if that fight will get made. At one point, it looked like it was going to happen. Mm-hmm. A lot of people want that fight to happen, but who knows? And this is another thing. Like, you're sitting here holding all the belts. You've got all the straps at 147. Mm-hmm. You've also won 2 belts at super lightweight. Mm-hmm. Okay. This is quite an accomplishment. But like sometimes you don't really hear, I don't really hear Catskill. I don't really hear Jesse McCaskill. Why is that? What's going on with that? What can you do to change that?
I think we're doing everything that we can to change it. We're staying busy. We're staying in the media. We've made this amazing resume, and it just seems like, you know, I'm not getting a lot of help on the other side. I mean, you know, Matchroom, they just put me on their website, like, at the end of my, you know, contract with them. And it was kind of embarrassing for me because people are like, hey, congratulations, you got signed with Matchroom. And I was like, yeah, like 3 years ago, you know? And so it's kind of unfortunate to have those kind of things happen to me when they wouldn't happen to other people. And so we just have to work with what we have. And it's difficult when you have to do things in that kind of a manner.
Yeah, but so what can you do now? What are you planning to do now to get, because your fight style is exciting. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I think it's exciting when you have the right dance partner. You mm-hmm. need the right dance. That's anyone, right? That's anyone. I mean, the Brakus fights, they were close. You know, well, the first one was close. The second one, I don't think was too close. But but you know, maybe not the most exciting fights in the world. But I've seen you in exciting fights. I know that if you have the right dance partner, there's going to be fireworks. You're a fighter,
right?
You know what I mean? People that don't know who you are, like, you're the sweetest person. You're very nice. You know, you really are. You're incredibly nice, but not in the ring.
Right. It's a different thing. The switch comes on and you're there to fight. And we've always tried to fight people who are there to defend their name, defend their legacy, defend their belts.
Right.
People who are coming for it. Sure. You know, we don't want any easy fights. We don't want people who have had long layoffs or health complications or anything like that. We're trying to go for the best of the best of the best. And we've gotten to a point now where it's like, okay, you know, who wants it and who's earned it? You know, I don't want, everybody's lining up for a payday. Everybody's going to call me out. I mean, I don't know, you might've called me out and I haven't checked my DMs or something. I mean, just everybody.
I don't want a piece of this. I don't want any piece of this.
It just gets to a point where, you know, because I have the belts, you get a little bit of everybody and nobody that's really serious about the sport. I mean, we started on this journey when Katie said, you know, we called 20 people and, you know, nobody wanted to fight. And we said, we want to fight. And from that moment on, we've been pushing female boxing because we didn't have to say yes. We didn't have to chase that. You know, right. We didn't have to, you know, do anything in that moment. And we did. And it's just been belts ever since.
But like, I mean, do you, you're campaigning right now. 147 is where you are the empress. You're the queen. You're reigning that supreme right now. Undisputed. That's huge. But it, obviously, Katie's the same at lightweight. Mm-hmm. So if that fight was to be made, could you get to 135?
Well, that's the thing is if she's fighting me for my belts, there's no reason for me to go to 135.
So you're saying she could go up to 147?
Yeah, she needs to come up. So it's one of those things where it's like we don't have to chase anymore. We did that for the very first fight a long time ago, and we made a statement, and it's been uphill ever since. And now we're at a point where the queen says, come up. If you want these belts, you got to come up.
Right. But I mean, you're not a kid either. Mm-hmm. You're not. I mean, how old are you now?
I will be 37 in a couple of days.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, Katie's 35.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of women that are getting up there more in age. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously Cecilia was a little bit older. I mean, Father Time beats everyone. How long do you think you could do this?
I think I'm a young 37, just because if we're going to compare my career and Katie's career, she's had so many amateur fights.
100% agree with you.
And that's got to be wearing on her body.
I don't think a lot of people know. You started it with 24 years old?
Yeah. I mean, around there. And I only had about 25 amateur fights.
It's incredible. It's really incredible.
Yeah.
It was like you got like something with like a kickboxing class and you're like, you're like, nah, I don't want to do these kicks.
Yeah.
I was and like, you went to the box and you were like, oh no, I like this.
Yes, exactly. It just, there was a different kind of fire with the boxing. And ever since I moved to Chicago, Rick was like, okay, we're going to do this and we're going to do it fast. And so I've just been like holding on. And one day he's like, yeah, so we should turn pro because, I mean, I fought this. There's a good number of girls in Chicago that you kind of go round robin with, you know. Sure. And it went from me fighting these girls to me knocking these girls out. And okay, well, what's next? He's like, we're going to turn pro. And I just like, okay, let's do it.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I brought your name up. So I did a bunch of interviews earlier. We had the press conference. There was a lot of media here and a lot of people were asking me about different fights. And I brought your name up several times today. And I'll tell you why. They were asking me about the Warrington-Lara fight. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's many different ways to look at this fight. And we can ask you about that. But that's the reason I'm going around my point to make my point. I think Warrington has a tough test with Mauricio Lara, because I think Lara, when he came into this fight against Josh Warrington, big name, former world champ, didn't lose his title in the ring. You know, he gave up his belt. I think that, you know, there's a sometimes fighters don't know if they really belong until they fight at that level. And once they do, if they win, number one, or if they lose, but in a close fight, and they're competitive, right, they're like, wait, I belong.
Right.
And it can really make you a better fighter. And I said, I believe that that happened with you when you fought Katie Taylor at Your Call. Am I correct in this?
I feel like all the fights had a little piece of that. Like if you're going up a ladder and it's like, okay, and the next rung and the next rung and the next rung, because every time I fought somebody, I was definitely the underdog. They had either more fights than I did, more experience, or I was moving up to a different weight class, or they had world titles before. And so every time I was able to defeat somebody, it was solidifying to me and my team and my coach.
That you belong.
Exactly.
You're getting rid of the imposter syndrome.
Right.
And but there's a difference when you fight the undisputed, you know, Katie Taylor. Like, yeah, she's a huge name in the sport.
Yeah. And then at that,
I mean, you lost and it was unanimous, right, decision. Right. Fine. But like, did you feel like I belong in there?
Oh, definitely. And at that time, I think I was her second title defense. And so she wasn't, I mean, I guess she had a name to some people, but I was like, who is this girl? I don't care. Let's go. You know, I wanted to fight.
I think it was like her eighth fight. It was like your seventh fight or something, or yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And but like you said, she had a storied amateur career.
Right.
Where you did not.
And she had a following, and you know, she was with Matchroom and whatnot, I believe, at that time. So yeah, there was definitely a step up to be done on my part.
Olympic gold medalist.
Yeah.
There was that thing. Olympic gold medal.
Right. I mean, and some of those things you really have to take into consideration, because when you're talking about a gold medal at that time and how deep the sport went and how deep, you know, the competition really went, was it really there? I'm not questioning her gold medal. I'm just saying, you know, it's a lot different then than it was now. Like, we have Summer Lin and she's fighting at 147 and she has a lot more time and opportunity to fight people, whereas I was fighting the next biggest thing back to back to back to back. So it's just, it was different then and it's different now. So
you're seeing the sport of female boxing evolve.
Yes. Yes. I've done my part to help it evolve, and that should be how it is. You know, we should be pushing for the next generation.
You know, I totally agree with you. And it's a big part of why I love to do what I do, because I love to push this sport, because I love the sport. I believe it's the best sport in the world. It's also terrible at times, and it's very brutal, and it's really a hard sport. But I believe at its core, it's the sport of kings and queens. I think it's the best sport in the world. But you just said something really important, because you're saying, like, talking about the next generation. And I've seen you do work with young people. Can you tell me a little bit about that and what you're doing with the new generation and young women coming up?
I'm basically just keeping myself open as like this open vessel to answer questions, to help other people find their style, their rhythm, what works for them. I think back in the day, coaches were just kind of telling people, this is how I used to fight, and you have to fight the way that I used to fight, because they didn't know how to teach and how to evolve the sport for that person. Rick has always taken any bad habits that I had and made them money, make it gold. You know, if I'm going to do it, if it's stuck in my head, we're going to make something good out of it. And so I'm trying to take a lot of his fighting style. He's taught me a lot of things on the trainer side, on the coach side, to where I can now push that out and try to help other people understand in different ways. You know, I think I'm a teacher at heart, and so I'm able to kind of maneuver things to where people really get it for themselves.
You know, you're such an interesting character, Jessica. You really are. You're an amazing person. No, you are. You are. There's just so much about you. And, you know, your story, it's been told several times. You know, there's a lot of tough stuff in your background. There's a lot of great stuff in your background, too. It's not all bad.
Yeah.
And people love to, like, paint, like, oh, she was homeless. And that's cool. And I know you were for a time. But there's a lot of strength that comes from it.
Oh, for sure.
Also, and there's also a lot of close-knit times with family and beauty that can come out of that too, although there's also pain.
Yeah.
And our stories are very different, but we do have a lot of similarities in our background. And one of yours, you talk about a teacher that changed your life.
Yeah.
And, you know, I want to hear you talk a little bit more about that, because I think it's really important, because I've had a couple people in my life that really helped me through some really tough times when you're a young person, and sometimes people don't know who they are, where they are. You didn't know you were going to be a boxer. You didn't know this. You didn't know boo, right? You didn't know what you're going to do. And you're like, I'm this awkward kid that you talk about being like that. You're awkward. You know, you're like, I was a weirdo, you know?
Yeah. Franklin School, an elementary school, once we kind of got back on our feet from being homeless, we were relocated to a different area. And so I had a new school that I had to go to, and I feel like that school changed my life. And there were teachers there, my fifth grade teacher, Ms. Metzger, my sixth grade teacher, who's no longer with us, Ms. McHugh, they talked to us like we were adults, because we were all going through very adult situations.
They didn't patronize you.
Yeah. They didn't treat us like kids. They didn't try to dumb things down. I mean, you know, they knew what we were going through because they saw it every day.
Sure.
And then they tried to educate us more based off of our experiences. And then just even through college, I'm about to be inducted into my college's Hall of Fame at the end of September. And in some of those professors, I was like, you have to reach out to this professor, invite them, make sure they're there, because it's basically my thank you letter to every teacher that's spent any extra time with me or was passionate about their job. You can see it. So those things were really important.
I know Ms. McHugh's not around anymore, but have you talked to any that are?
Oh yeah. So I'm doing a fundraiser actually for Franklin School, because I don't know if you remember the little Scholastic book fair things where you see the paper and you're like,
of course.
I mean, back in my day, I was like, oh, I can afford that eraser. You know, I didn't have money for that stuff. And
dude, when the people don't know out there watching, it was a big deal.
Yeah.
And right? even when you can buy a book.
Yeah.
When you could buy a book, or
it was the coolest.
It was really cool. It was really cool. Yeah.
And I just want to try to improve the literacy rate in that area. And some of these kids literally do not have books at home to practice reading. Mm. So this year I am funding the entire school. Every kid gets one book every month for the whole school year. So I've already sent out my half of the money. I'm trying to get other people to help me and donate money. And, you know, I have links on my social media where you guys can donate. But I just want to give back.
Can you say it right now so people out there listening can go to it? Because guys, please donate. What is it?
Yeah, just find me on Jessica McCaskill, either on Facebook or Instagram. And I have the links in my bio. And any money that I'm matching up to $2,500. So they already have $2,500 of my money. And I'm trying to get everybody else to finish the rest of the school year with me. So that's me giving back to that school that did so much for me.
Sure. So you're biracial. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Your parents, you were really raised by your great aunt.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Is she still around?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, cool.
She's at home. She's chilling.
All right.
She's on vacation for like a week.
What's her name?
Christine. Christine Shoemaker. Yeah.
Okay. And you have brothers?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any sisters?
Yeah, so I think I went through a lot of different phases in my life where I was discovering a lot of different parts of me. And I met my real mother as an adult after college. I met some of my blood brother and sisters in that same kind of space and time. I grew up with three boys. They're my cousins. Mm-hmm. And so I've learned, I was the youngest of the three boys growing up, and then I'm the oldest of like a sister and two sisters and three other boys. And so it's like, it's really kind of funny in your mind when you think about it.
No, it's great. And are you guys, so I want to know what it was like meeting your parents later on in life.
I haven't met my dad in person, but we've had like exchanges through phone conversations and kind of keep tabs on each other. I did get to meet my grandmother and some of my aunts on my dad's side when we were in Tulsa, because they live close and they made the trek out after the fight, and I got to meet my grandmother. So that was really amazing. And it's like one of those things where you talk on social media, but then like to see blood in person from a side of the family that you never really got to know. Like, I don't speak Spanish. I didn't have a lot of Hispanic upbringing. And so it was just good to connect to that.
Your dad's black, your mom's Mexican.
Switch it.
Oh, sorry. Yes. Yeah, okay.
My dad's Mexican. My
dad's Mexican, mom's black. Yes. Okay, gotcha. Yeah. So just for the fans out there listening, I'm talking about Spanish. what was that feeling like meeting them for the first time?
I was very proud.
Was this after you won all these accolades?
Fight. Yeah, it's after the fight, and like my face is a little busted up, and right. Nice to meet you.
But and this was at Tulsa. This was in Tulsa.
This was Texas. I'm sorry, the second Cecilia fight in Texas because they live in Texas, not too far away, so they made the drive. But I was very proud to be able to say like I'm doing something for the family name.
Yeah, sure.
You know, so it was good to just see like generations in front of me and just to kind of connect. You know, it was really weird, but it was awesome at the same time.
I want to ask you, I'm really curious about this because I remember like when I first met you some years ago, like this whole investment banking situation, because it's something that a lot of people don't talk about.
Yeah.
But you did go to college and you do have a really smart brain.
Thank you.
You know, and also you're really artistic and you do stuff with oils and with yes. butters and you do some artwork. You do all kinds of stuff.
I just like to stay busy, and I've always been like that since I was a kid. Just create anything. I got tools at home that Rick doesn't let me use because he thinks I'm gonna cut my finger off. And so I'm into a little bit of everything.
And the investment bank, so were you always a numbers person?
I would say I was always a numbers person. I love math, and I never thought I would use it in that kind of direction. And I got a communications degree, so I'm used to things like this, talking in front of people and just kind of trying to help people with different things, you know, just kind of bonding with people in person. So, yeah, numbers and being in investment banking was a total left turn.
Let me ask you that. When you were a little girl, what did you see yourself as?
I think I wanted to be a teacher. And then I got into college and kind of saw all this really cool stuff with like videos and, you know, Photoshop and creating print ads. And I just, that was like the pinnacle of creation for me. So then I got into that. And then when I graduated, there were these 9-year-olds that were coming out with like YouTube channels. And I was like, oh my God, I just spent all this money and I could have done it for free. Right. So I use my communications in different ways now. So that's kind of actually better.
But the investment, like, tell me about this whole business, how this happened.
I literally fell into it. I was working in St. Louis at Home Depot, like their corporate center, training people. And there was a guy that he worked in the IT department. I always thought what he was doing was interesting. So I would kind of like bug him when I was on breaks and stuff like that. And they were going to close down that location and then open up in Georgia and then Utah. And I said, you know, you give me a raise and I'll go. And they're like, nah. And so I was like, nah, he tweaking. So, okay, I'm going to just go ahead and take the severance pay. But the guy that I made friends with, you know, he said, hey, my sister's looking for somebody in Chicago and I think you'll be a perfect fit. And we've talked so much. I was like, well, if he thinks I'm a perfect fit, I'm going to go for it. And
this was at an investment banking firm.
Yeah. And I just kind of made that. I did a bunch of interviews over the phone and they hired me over the phone. I thought that was crazy. I was like, I could.
And you had no background in this?
Nope.
You were from Home Depot to investment banking?
Yep. A lot of training. And before that, I did a lot of ad agency type stuff. And so it was like a total field shift.
You worked at a theater?
Yes. Yeah. I used to manage a theater when I was in high school. A lot of different things. A lot
What other jobs did you have? I've had a lot of jobs.
I've worked for like churches, like designing their pamphlets and things like that. Gosh, I haven't even looked at my resume in so long.
I'm going to interrupt you again because you just hit on something. You talked about the church, and I know that spirituality is really important for you.
Yeah, for sure.
You want to talk about that just a little bit?
I it's my background. It's how I was raised, and I think it's my job on this earth to love people and to try to spread that. And, you know, I'm not one to judge. I don't, you know, care how people live their lifestyle. And as long as I can try to be of help to people and let them know that the things that I've gone through in my life and have survived, that's because of God. You know, that's kind of my main goal.
Do you find a lot of power in your faith?
Yes.
Have you always, or was there like a certain point where like it kind of, or you've just kind of always?
That's all I've ever known. I mean, we would spend like 5.5 out of 7 days of the week in church, you know, in revivals and Sunday school and praise dance and choir practice. And, you know, so it was just like always church. My mom's a pastor. So it was always church.
Ah, your mom's a pastor.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. So I've always been in the church, and ironically.
And when you say your mom, your mom, Christine.
I call Christine
right,
my
that's
mom.
What I thought. Okay. Yes. Just making sure.
And ironically enough, when we were homeless, we lived in the back of a church.
In the back of a church.
So it was always church. And I pull a lot of my, my power and my motivation from my faith and, it's just, it's always been there for me.
How long, because I know you talk about like when you grew up, you had a really nice house. Like things were great. Like living on the high, like you didn't even know it, obviously, because you're a kid.
Yes.
So you just, things are good.
This is life.
And then all of a sudden, like things started to like disappear and you're like, what's going on? And all of a sudden you guys disappeared. Like you were out of there.
Yeah. Rick actually did a little documentary called Making McCaskill. It's on Amazon. And so you can see those different lifestyles. You see the houses and then you see the church that we lived in.
Right.
And yeah, I didn't know anything other than the life that I was living. And then, you know, I kind of realized, okay, we're listening to a radio every morning.
Right.
She's buying McDonald's every morning. Right. So like, okay, that in the adult world, the power's off, the electricity, you know, the gas, those things are off, can't cook. And then you kind of start seeing different parts of furniture leaving. And then
what, like, do you remember in your mind, like what were you thinking?
I think I was just more so paying attention, because when you're that young,
you didn't know what was going to happen.
They don't, when you're that young in my day and age, and maybe the culture that I grew up in, they don't sit down and have adult conversations with you.
Sure.
That's why I appreciated the teachers that I had, because they did.
Right.
They knew we knew, and they had those conversations. So it was more so just kind of like taking notes, like, okay, this is happening.
But yeah, I was going to say, because kids are really receptive.
Yeah.
I mean, they're like little sponges.
They're smart.
You might think they don't understand something. They know what's going on. Yeah. They might not know what's going on, but they're soaking it in.
And they remember.
Yeah.
So.
And they remember.
It was just kind of a piece by piece thing. And then.
But did it feel ominous to you? Or were you just not sure what was happening?
At the time, it was just me taking notes. But at the time, I'm like, yeah, we get McDonald's again.
Right, you know, right, right. Turn up. Yeah. Now it's like, yeah, you didn't want to eat
and
that.
Now when you look back, it's like you almost see it with a whole different pair of glasses.
Of course. Like, whoa. Of course. How did your brothers take it?
So one of the older brothers, he went off to the Navy, and then the brother under that, he was with us for a while, and then he went to the Army, but he was with us through some of that transition. And
what's the age difference between?
I'm not really sure.
Is it a lot, or they're older? Okay.
Yeah. Like, Justin, I keep in contact with him the most. He's in Atlanta, and he's, probably like 3-4 years older than I am. Yeah. He'll be 40 soon. So,
and like, did you ever, because it seems like, again, I know it was bumpy, and then from there you guys went to live in the back of a church, and there was a bunch of you in one room, and it was tough living, especially coming from where you had.
Right, there was turmoil, and just like the anxiety of, you know, I hope everybody's okay today, and you don't want to make anybody upset, and you're the youngest one in the room, and so it's just kind of like.
You felt that.
It's nerve-wracking. Yeah, it's very stressful. Even kids can go through stress, and I went through a lot of like stressful moments where it was just like, I was just trying to do everything right, you know?
Sure.
So it's good to know that about kids, and to understand that, and to be able to address them and talk to them in that manner, having those understandings.
But like, how much sweeter is life now having gone through that?
It's something that I can always draw from, or, you know, I think the thing that I say is like, going to fight somebody is no big deal. I've been homeless. Like, getting punched in the face is fine. You know, I have somewhere to live after I get punched in the face, you know? So it's not a lot of these fights. I don't get anxious. I don't get scared, because I've had scarier moments in my life.
I've been through worse.
Yeah. And now things are really good. And I just try to use my platform to give back, because some of those moments were really, they were really hard, but they were really amazing because of like special people.
They say sometimes you got to go through hell before you get to heaven.
Yeah.
And a lot of times it's really true.
Yeah.
And so, like, you know, I said, like, we have a lot of similarities, even though we have a lot of differences, but there's a lot of similarities in the tough times I've been through in my life. They, like, I'm cut from a different cloth because of it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And if I was going to sit and cry about it, that would be different. But it's like, no, you got to build the bridge and get over it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because you got to live your life. Like, nobody's, you know, when an animal gets wounded, it doesn't sit and like want you to cry. It just, it moves on with
right, figures, you know, it out.
It figures it out. It has to, or a golf in the corner and die by itself.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's not asking for all that sympathy. Mm-hmm. Because nobody cares.
Right.
And everybody got a story, right? Everybody got a story.
Exactly.
And I think I've heard you say it, but like, where would I be if I had a silver spoon in my mouth?
Yeah.
Probably exactly. Not here.
And I can't help other people if I sit and say, woe is me about my life. You know, I have to get over it so that I can help other people get through what they're going through. I had a guy at one of the gyms I was working out, and, you know, I brought the belt so he could see it, because I saw him, you know, every time I was working out, I would see him, and he was like, man, I'm going through cancer right now. And you like motivate me. And I'm like thinking like, this is
That's a real fighter.
Yes. You're going through life-threatening situation and I'm your motivation. Like that's just a blessing to be able to do that for somebody.
The other thing too is like, I mean, sometimes people grow up with a family intact, but there might not be a lot of love there.
Yeah.
And there might be abuse.
Yeah.
In all types of ways. And it sounds like you had a very there was a lot of turmoil and, yeah. and bumpy, but there was a lot of love there. It sounds like that. Even like you're still close with Christine and
yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've had my kind of in and out trying to figure out life kind of moments. I went off and did college and just kind of like separated myself and did a lot of things on my own and kind of came back as, you know, this adult, this like accomplished human being. And, you know, because I felt like I was the youngest person. And so I just kind of got treated as such. And I needed to break out. I needed to like live life and mess up and, you know, figure it out. And
of course, bump your own head.
Yeah. Yeah. So there was some time where I spent some time away from a lot of people and came back around and was like, all right, let's pick it up and keep going.
When did Jessica become like go from like the awkward to like, oh, you
I'm
know
so,
what? Like,
I'm
the,
still
like,
awkward.
Like, what? No, you're not. You're being self-deprecating. You're not awkward. You're super cool. We've hung out several times. You're super cool. Because like I think you talk about it yourself, like I was all awkward as a kid, but then you were like at one point you just said like, I'm not too worried about what these people think. Like how did that transition happen for you?
That might have been college where it was kind of like, you have to figure this out. Like there's a lot of money going into what you're doing and you can't mess up too many times. Mm. And if you have to run to class barefoot because you forgot your shoe, I mean, it's just like, there's so many things that happen where it's just like, I just have to make it work. And then that's when you stop caring about what other people think. And then you realize how comfortable you are and how freeing that is. And so maybe college, I don't know. I loved college. College was some of the best days of my life. And I'm really excited about this whole, you know, induction into the Hall of Fame because I felt like college did a lot for me and college isn't for everybody and that's fine. But I think that, you know, a certain level of education is important for kids and sometimes they just need that direction. And at Franklin School, my elementary school, we had like, we said the pledge and then we had this pledge about being a star because that's their mascot, the stars. And then after the pledge, we would say, and I will graduate from high school and I will go to college. And we said that every day. And then to go to college and now to be inducted into the Hall of Fame, it's like, this is crazy.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
But it's not. Hard work pays off. Like yeah. you've put in the hard work. Yeah. And people that don't know, if they could do some little bit of background on you, they'll know. Yeah. Are you still now working at the investment bank?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. That confused me. She goes, yes. No. Yes. Okay, what's happening?
TBD. So, you know, right now we're just trying to figure. I mean, I'm at a point in my career with boxing where it's like, do I need to continue to, you know, make those hours at the investment bank? And do I need to stress myself out? Can I be putting more time into boxing? Like working two full-time jobs is crazy. And if you don't have to do it, you know, why would you? So there's a lot of conversation going on now and, you know, we're going to figure some things out in the near future, maybe beginning of next year. So
when we say that you work in an investment bank, are you actually an investment banker?
I'm not trading. Rick used to trade. He would be the believe it or not, he would be the loud guy on the floor yelling and, you know, okay. But me, I work like back office. So I had a lot of clients in Asia. So kind of follow the sun. So I do have to get up for work as well. So
sure.
That's why the training is so early. Because
what is your actual job there? Like what does it entail?
It's called regulatory reporting. You know how when banks get fined like $150,000 because their numbers are off, it's kind of sketchy. You know, I have to make sure our numbers are in line or else we will get fined. So I have to let everybody know this is what we have. This is what the client has. We all have to agree. So again, back to the numbers. I know right. A lot of numbers.
So you have to be on the same page, but mm-hmm. It's also people, right? You got to deal with people on different continents, different mm-hmm. countries. Okay. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yep. Yeah. It's a lot. Doing two full-time jobs is hard. I mean, doing boxing alone is difficult.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, honestly, like white collar, they love it. They want to see the bumps and bruises. They want to hear the war stories and they love it. They do.
And they come out to the fights.
Yeah. Yeah. Both the times we fought in the Winter's Arena, I made sure everybody had tickets. I made sure they had t-shirts and they came out and supported. So that was really cool.
What's talk about your relationship a little bit with Rick.
Rick is crazy. Rick is straight up crazy.
We all know that. We all know that.
It's been a very long learning lesson. And now I feel like I know if you ask him a question, I could probably answer it before he does. Just
wow.
Because we've spent so much time together. He's been completely transparent in, you know, what our next moves are. And he's transparent in the fact of like, okay, we do this, we win, we have these options. We lose, we have these options. He's not just like blowing smoke, like, oh, you're great, you're going to win, blah, blah, blah. Like he's,
no, he's not a yes man.
He's a businessman.
No, he's not a yes man. He's a businessman.
Yeah. And so we're always prepared for one thing or the next. And then he usually has something crazy up his sleeve. So I just kind of have to be prepared and he knows I'm game for it. So it works out.
I love the story, you guys, because it's just, it, you know, all these people shutting the door in your face, like, oh, women's bot, nah, we don't want you, we don't want you. Yeah. And then you're knocking out Rick's fighter. He's like, wait, who is this?
Yeah.
And I mean, after some of these great wins is when he really finally started to get to know some of your background, right?
Yeah, he talks about that sometimes. And I
because when you guys started, it was just boxing. It was like, right, it was boxing.
Right.
And that's the language you spoke.
I didn't realize.
But now it's grown.
Yeah, I came in, I guess, super closed off, but I didn't know anybody in Chicago. I took that leap for a job and I didn't know anybody. I wasn't hanging out with people. Like I might have known two people in the whole city. And my dog. So it was like I came in and I came into work.
What's your dog's name?
That was Diego at the time. Diego's no longer with us. But I have Blessing and Beloved, and they're sassy little pit bulls. So bring them to the gym every once in a while as well. So.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Rick's over there tearing up. Oh. He's about to cry. I love it. He's a great guy.
It's been a crazy journey. And as soon as he realized like I was putting my 100% effort in it, he was like, all right, I can do something with this, because that's all he knows is 100% effort.
Well, Rick's always said that. It's like, I think Rick would train anyone as long as you're willing to listen and put in the work.
Yeah.
Am I right with that, Rick? And he's saying, yeah.
My goal was,
It doesn't matter how good you are. If you don't want to listen to him, he's got no,
And that was my whole goal, is to listen. And if he was wrong, I was going to say, I told you so, and this is your fault. And I was going to listen to every single thing he said. And I haven't been able to tell him I told you so yet. So it's...
So Jessica, outside of boxing, outside of investment banking, outside of fourth grade, like, what do you love to eat? Oh. Do you cook?
I don't cook as much as I used to. We're always on the go with stuff. And so it's just kind of, neighborhood food and supporting the community. We're big about that. Rick knows a lot of people that own restaurants. And so we like to give them our patronage. And I used to cook a lot. I can cook.
What do you like to cook?
I cook lasagna. I like to cook with wine and cheese. And some of those like
yum,
really thick Italian type things. And
speaking my language, sounds beautiful.
I mean, I love a good salad too. Don't get me wrong, but yeah, I like that kind of stuff. And I love tools. I love buying power tools and making things. I could probably make your house. It might not be up to code, but I can make it. It would be sturdy. So I do a little bit of that. And I like watching HDTV, those kind of things, remodeling homes.
You like the HDTV? Yeah. That's addictive.
It is. I love it.
HDTV is addictive.
Vacation is like getting a hotel and binge watching HDTV.
Yeah, for sure. Because
I don't even have TV at home. So I watch Netflix.
What do you watch? Any series that you dig?
I was just watching Motel Makeover. Same kind of thing. Rick is always into like crime stuff, mobster type stuff. So I watch a lot of that. I fall asleep to serial killer documentaries. Found that out recently. It's kind of creepy. Almost anything really. I like to learn.
Where do you see yourself in the future? Obviously can't box forever. Right. What does Jessica want to do? Where do you see yourself in several years?
I see myself helping fighters. And what I mean by helping fighters is helping them understand the different things that they have to do and how they have to kind of level up, whether it's their social media, whether it's, helping with their image, whether it's their public outreach, community service, helping them train, all of those things. It's not just get in the gym, train, and fight.
There's a lot to it.
Yeah, there is. And I don't think people realize that. And I think I have a really well-rounded, very verse understanding of that. So I want to be able to do that for other people.
Mm. Okay. Sorry. Someone just barged in.
Rude. I think it was Mr. Ben. Connor.
That was Connor Ben?
It looked like it, yeah.
Hey, do I look like I do these podcasts? I leave my family.
Crushing it in the pod booth.
That's crushing it in the pod booth. Yeah. That's funny. All right. I got some notes here from, let's see. Oh, Are you okay to answer some fan questions here?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. And well, before we get to the fan questions, you've been really generous with your time, but I asked you where you see yourself in the future, mm-hmm. but I'm just curious, not that you do, but do you have any regrets from the past?
No, you can't have regrets. I mean, even the failures are successes because you learn how to not fail in that manner again, and you're able to share your story to other people, and that helps them. I know I sound super cheesy, but I just love to help people. It's like the best thing ever.
No, it's a great feeling.
Yeah, I love it. So, and just to see someone go from like one level to a higher level, and it's just like amazing to just see someone like go spread their wings, and I want to do that.
Giving is better than receiving.
Yeah, for sure.
It is. It's a wonderful feeling. So, all right, we have fan questions. Mm-hmm. Are you okay to answer some fan questions?
Yes.
Okay, wonderful. Let's see here. All right. Julio James asks, Jess, I'm a big fan, but growing up, who did you look up to in the world of boxing?
No one. I remember seeing like boxing and like Tyson, and everybody was super fancy with their fur coats and things like that. That's all I really remember. And I
turned you off?
No, I thought it was cool, but it just, I mean, I'm sure it was past my bedtime back then too. So I didn't see a lot of boxing, and I didn't have people in the family talking about boxing. And I didn't have plans to be a boxer until I was a lot older. So it wasn't something that really like stayed in my mind. And I did love sports. I like to be competitive. And so in the sports world, FloJo was kind of like the coolest thing back in the day.
She was big. She was big.
Yeah, she was doing her thing and doing it, you know, how she wanted to do it with the hair and the nails and the makeup.
Yeah.
And I just thought it was good for someone to represent themselves and not to be put in a box of any kind of sort. And she was killing it. So I liked to watch FloJo. My mom was a big inspiration. I saw her go through some tough times, and just, you know, from being homeless and not having a job. And then you see her get up in the morning and put her makeup on. And I'm like, you don't have nowhere to go. Where are you putting makeup
but
on?
But it's
for?
The pride.
It's the process and staying ready.
Staying ready.
You know, if you get that phone call tomorrow, are you going to be able to get yourself up and get ready on time? She was basically practicing, you know, and so I saw that, and I remembered it, and I used that myself.
I love that, and I think it's such an important life lesson. It's huge. And in boxing, it's almost nowhere more true than in boxing,
yeah,
right?
For sure.
Stay ready, because you'll get that call. You never know.
Yeah, somebody asked me in the lobby, like, did you bring your gloves? I'm like, yeah, Rick brought his mitts.
So you never know.
My gloves. Gotta train and be ready, and, you know.
I love it.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Can I ask you this, though? I know, like, you know, growing up, first of all, people that don't know, for deals in the UK, St. Louis, that's a rough city.
Yeah.
Like St. Louis, not a joke.
Yeah.
Chicago's not a joke.
Yeah.
So you grew up in some tough places, mm-hmm. but had you ever been in a fist fight as a little girl?
Because
it doesn't seem like it really, like, hearing your story and knowing you, like, I almost can't really see it. Like, I mean, maybe once or twice, but like
I've had a few small altercations. But again, my mom was a pastor. Like, if I got in trouble,
yeah.
I got in trouble like three times over. So I was trying to stay out of trouble, but fought with my brother a couple times, and maybe like a little something at school. Like, I've gotten a fight with this boy at school, but it was just like getting in trouble was never worth the fight to me. It was like, you know, just stupid. So I didn't have a lot of that. And maybe that's, there was a very long time where I would have dreams where I couldn't punch because I didn't know what it felt like. So I couldn't even replicate that in my dreams. And it was just kind of like, you know, limp.
So you'd
limp
get in
arm.
A fight in your dream and you just couldn't.
I couldn't even, like, my arms were limp. And, you know, it just, those dreams obviously went away when I started boxing because it was just like, I knew what full contact was. And so maybe a lot of that not being allowed to fight and get in trouble, all of that bottled up finally came out, and now I'm using all of that to
I was gonna say. Well, but I mean, a lot of times when you go through a lot of pain or you have a lot of energy or mm-hmm. whatever yeah. it is, whatever's inside you that yeah. needs to come out, it can happen on a bag or someone's face or whatever.
Exactly.
And you found that in boxing. Is that, I mean, I don't want to speak for you. Did you find that in boxing?
Yeah, I found a lot of that release and found out that I was actually like really good at it, and that
sure.
I had a lot of power, and so a lot of that just came out.
Had you ever been good at something before in your life?
I had done a lot of team sports, and boxing was the first time that I was in an individual sport, and I think for me that made all the difference. You know, it's just I'm depending on me. I'm not depending on anyone else to pass the ball, to pass the ball to anything. It's I'm relying on myself and my team, and then when you get in the ring, it's all you. Like, I can hear Rick because he's loud and he yells when I'm in the ring, but so I can hear him when he's yelling directions, and we have this kind of like, you know, we could be in the same room together and not talk and move through the room, and then we get out outside of the room, and it's like we had a whole conversation.
Yeah, that's amazing. Kind of like coach-fighter relationship. That's the synergy. I love that synergy.
Yeah, so I think the big difference with boxing is that it was an individual sport, but I have done other things before. You know, I used to sing a lot when I was little, and all plays and dance and all kinds of stuff. So I have a theater dance minor from college. So
triple threat.
Yeah.
Cascilla killing it all. And this is another, my question, I'm sorry, just because I know I've jumped into the fan question. Sorry, fans out there. That's it. My name is on the podcast, so I get to ask the questions, people.
There you go.
But you talk about you fought with your brother, mm-hmm. and you fought with a boy at school, mm-hmm. and now sparring, mm-hmm. you must fight a lot of guys. Mm-hmm. What is that like? I'm always curious about that. I've asked several different fighters about it, but like, do these guys go full on with you, or do they like, I mean, how rough does it get?
It's comical because, you know, Rick will hire somebody to come in and they'll say, yeah, I'll give her some work. I'll give her a few rounds, you know, very like, I'll help her out. And then they leave with a busted nose and they don't necessarily address me.
They're all lumped up.
But they'll go to Rick and they'll be like, yo, the chick hits hard, you know, and they'll compliment me in that kind of a way, not to me, but, you know, to Rick or to somebody sure. else. And some guys, they'll like see, we have a guy at the gym, Si Chin, and he helps us out with sparring a lot. And he'll be very vocal about like, oh man, you got me with a nice body shot. And, you know, because when you're boxing, you don't show pain or weakness.
Of course.
Because that's the end.
You just said something so that I love so much, because, you know, you talk about like football, right? Like non-American football, like soccer.
Yeah.
You know, these guys, someone looks, you know, cross-eyed out and they're, you know, they got to get taken off on a stretcher and this, that, and the third. And I'm not dissing soccer. I love soccer, but that does happen. We know basketball, they do the same thing. Sometimes you wind it back. I didn't even get touched and he's flopping. Yeah. Boxing, you get hit hard, you say nope. Yeah. That's why no means yes.
Yeah.
When people say no, it almost always means it's a tell. Yeah. It's a tell. It's like poker. Yeah. Boxing, the only one, nope, that didn't hurt. You might inside going, oh my God.
Exactly.
But you're like, nah, you don't want to show weakness.
Yeah.
Because that does, I mean, like, if for anyone out there that's fought, when you sock someone as hard as you can and they just like.
And they keep coming, you don't know if it's you or you're like, them or.
Are they just like Jason from Friday the 13th or Michael Myers from Halloween exactly. or what's going on? This is a monster.
Yeah.
Like I've had that. It can take a little bit of your heart when you feel like I can't hurt this guy.
It's all mental.
They might be getting killed, but they're not showing it. And, yeah. but the moment you see that little wince, I got him.
Exactly.
I got him. Exactly. You know where to go. So, but do they, how, like when I've sparred and I've sparred quite a lot, mm-hmm. sometimes, you know, it can start out a little light. But once someone starts sitting down on some punches and then there's a little bad intent, a fight breaks out.
Yeah.
And you're going.
Yeah.
Does that happen with these guys?
I don't think it necessarily goes to the extreme. Once they feel some punches, they'll go. But again, I don't think guys will want to say like, yeah, I was fist to cuff with, you know, Jessica. I don't think they want to say that they went to punch as hard as they could with
me. Right.
But at the same time, yeah, there are some wars in there because I don't let them off the hook and they get lazy and
sure.
females fight at a higher pace. And when the guys are, you know, coming off of a combination and they try to walk off, I'm right there and I'm like, I'm making them fight. So my whole goal is to like bust them up and get them out of there.
Well, you have to with 2 minute rounds. What do you think of that? Do you like 2 or 3 minute rounds?
It doesn't matter to me. I think we've always trained, except for I think the last Cecilia fight, we trained 3 minute rounds and then we switched it up. So now we're training 2 minute rounds. So we're used to 3 minute rounds, but it's just kind of a different game plan. If you have less time, you have to get more punches in and there's no breaks and you have to push the pressure. And so you have to be, you have to have the stamina for it. So it's just a kind of a different kind of training. But, you know, as long as it's safe for females, or maybe when the depth of female boxing gets a little deeper and there's more females in it, because think about it. So we fight 3 minute rounds and, you know, I knock out my opponent. She's suspended for 60 to 90 days. That's one less person that can fight.
Sure.
And if that's happening with everyone,
the pool is a lot less in female boxing.
Yeah.
There's a lot of women coming up though.
Yeah.
The Ellie Scottneys and the April McDonalds and the Sandy Ryans and there's Savannah Marshall and Terry Harper and mm-hmm. any of these young fighters that you really like, or someone that you don't like? You want to someone? How about that? That's even better. Someone you don't like. You want to call anyone out? Who wants that?
Who get wants called out smoke? So much now. It's just
who's calling you out? Who's calling you out?
I don't even know half of these people. They don't have like a winning record. They're looking for the belts. You know.
Of course.
And some of these people that we did call out before I had belts, they said no, and then they want to call me out now, and it's just like, okay, skip that message, keep going. You know, it's just, you know, we're trying to do really big things, crossover fight. If Katie Taylor wants to do the rematch, if not, we're looking to just make something happen, because we've hit like this really, it's like a humble brag, like, oh, we don't have anywhere else to go because we've reached the top. But, you know, it's like, it's true. It's hard to find something worthwhile, history breaking type of things to do. So, I mean, you know, we're here. If Katie wants the fight, she needs to speak up. It's not something that she can't keep pushing stuff off on other people. She can't keep saying, oh, I don't make the choice, because she's at a point in her career where she can make anything happen. And if she's going to cruise it out and fight like, you know, smaller, lesser names or invent, you know, mandatories, then that's fine. We just don't want it to be dangled in front of our face. You know, if somebody tells you, hey, keep doing good and keep winning and we'll revisit this, and then I create this crazy resume of wins and beating undefeated people and becoming undisputed, that's exactly what you said to do. And then, you know, you're not fulfilling your, and then we just need a yes or no, because we'll make something else happen. Rick has always done that.
Well, there's no doubt she'll listen to this. Do you want to say something to
her? Hey girl, good luck on Saturday. Not that, I mean, you know, yeah, good luck on Saturday and stop running. Like if you want it, take it. If you don't, just quit now and end your career. I mean, you know, I'm trying to do my best to elevate the sport as a whole, and I'm not done yet, you know, and so the chance is here, and if you let it fly by, you'll regret it.
All right, on to the next fan question. Fan question two. Camille, oh, here we go. At Camille Washington 008 asks, you've literally conquered 147. Where does the next challenge lie? Up in weight?
There's a lot of options. I mean, we can do this thing where we just do a bunch of fights at different weight classes and try to get, you know, different levels of world championships. That's an option. Trying to do a crossover fight. I don't know who would be interested. We haven't gotten any traction there, but I'm sure, you know, a couple phone calls away, we could do that. Maybe do some BKB. There's a ton of things to do. We just want to make the smartest move for our career. We almost fought bare knuckle boxing before we got the WBC fight. We were like two phone calls away from just even going to see the fights. They wanted us to come out and see how the event was run and different things like that. And then we got the opportunity to fight for the WBC. And so it was like, okay, let's put that on hold and stay focused on what we're doing, because we know we could take this far, and we have. So maybe revisiting that could be exciting. You know, seeing me fight, bare knuckle fight, you'd watch that, right? Be insane.
I mean, if it's boxing, if it's fighting, I'm gonna watch it.
Yeah, exactly.
Like all kinds of fighting.
Yeah.
Whether it's Muay Thai or mixed martial arts.
I might have to start stretching my legs out again. I don't know.
there you go. But boxing is my number one sport. Everyone knows that about me. So I'd like to see, obviously, stay in that. But and obviously, you know, I feel like it's better to protect your hands.
Yeah. That's why we stepped back the first time, because we were getting an opportunity that we felt like, okay, we can push this all the way. And so, I mean, there's no doubt that before my entire career is over, we'll go get a belt from the BKB. And at some point, you know, maybe not tomorrow, but we keep our options open.
Do what you got to do. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's see here. Well, you know, I wanted to ask, because this guy said you conquered 147. I just have a question about this, because this is not, you know, you have a fighter like Cecilia, mm-hmm. who took her years to, like, collect these belts, and then you come in and just, like, whoop, yeah. Mine. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, do you feel like you've conquered 147? Like,
yeah, I feel like the girls that she fought to get all those belts, I could have knocked them out, and that they weren't, you know, the level of what the fighters coming up now are. I mean, you got the old school fighters who run like 20 miles and they got like a 15-minute pace, and they're just doing like old school workouts, and we're doing workouts with speed and agility and explosiveness, and the training is just different. And some of those people are still stuck in that era,
right,
even today. And yeah, we were able to show that with the Cecilia fight. It's just how explosive we are and how many punches we can throw and the pressure that we can push the entire 10 rounds. And, you know, she couldn't handle it. And I just feel like that shows, like, I could have beat anybody she bought. So give me that record. I'll take that. You know,
is there, cause you know, Cecilia is like typically like she's super respectful and this and that, but there was some angst coming up to that.
Yeah,
that second fight.
She didn't like, you know, I was only addressing the facts. Fact is, she said that she wanted no excuses. She wanted the best me that I could. Yeah, give.
You were like, I don't want to hear about Big Bear. I don't want to hear about.
And what happened? We heard about her being stuck in Big Bear. We heard about her not having her team with her. We heard all these excuses. And I wasn't the one to say no excuses. She was. So I was feeding her words back to her. And I guess nobody's ever done that before. But I'm here to spit the facts. Don't put anything out there that you're not ready to defend.
Have you guys talked since the second fight?
No, I don't talk to that guy. I don't know her like that. I don't.
You don't. You guys aren't cool.
There's one person that I would have conversation with. We haven't talked a lot, but Brenda Gonzalez. I fought her. She was like maybe my fourth, fifth fight, something around there. And she fought in Chicago with me.
Okay.
And we went the distance. It was maybe six rounds back then. Went the distance. And she's just always been a really awesome person. And she's a school teacher. And she coaches the wrestling team down in Arizona. New Mexico. And she just fought Summer Lynn, and they had their first title fight, and it was 10 rounds. And so seeing her again was great. We're friends on Facebook, but she's probably the only one that I have a connection to that I've fought. So.
Facebook friends.
Yeah.
That means real friendship.
Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding.
We've been on there for a long time as friends.
So. Yeah. That's great. Okay, Scott, the producer's telling me to hurry up and wrap it up. But, you know, I love to upset him and keep going longer. So sorry, I think, man, I'm going to have to.
We've done an hour nearly. It's just gone by.
Yeah, but it's Jesse McCaskill.
Very true. We could always do the second episode tomorrow.
This is Caskiller. Do you know?
I'll hide.
All right, we'll wrap it up soon, but not just yet. Okay. Speaking of, because another question that I want to ask Jessica. I asked about sparring guys, and then we just talked about these different opponents and how your friends. Do you ever spar women? Do you find good women sparring?
Rick will find good women sparring, and that's usually having people come out from, you know, far away. Ariel Davis from Louisiana, we sparred with her. Tiara Brown, she's sparred with us as well. And that's more so just kind of like networking in the female market. You know, it's not necessarily like, hey, we need her because she has these different things, but it's like, hey, let's bring her in. Let's show her how we work, how we train, what our camps look like. We don't say camps because we train all the time. I'm training, you know, now. I don't have a fight lined up, so we don't necessarily say camps, but
stay ready.
It's more so
just like your mom with the makeup and stay ready. That's it.
And I spar with Summer. She's 147 fighter and she's in the gym. So we definitely sharpen each other's tools.
Well, because I, like, you know, again, I asked you about that guy's going full force with you. Cause I feel like it's a difference when you're sparring someone, when they're just kind of not, you know, they're letting off a little bit of the mustard mm-hmm. to where people are sitting on their punches. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's
sure.
a difference.
Yeah. There's guys that try to like pot shot me and get that one good shot or shot to the body. And
right.
they have no idea. That doesn't bother me at all. Let's go. I'll take your shot and hit you while you're hitting me. Cause I know you're going to leave yourself open. Like, I'll let them get a shot so I can get my shot. So yeah, I definitely get some of that like overpowered testosterone from guys, you know, to the point where, you know, I just make sure, like, it normally if I'm sparring with a female, I'll say, hey, we're not going to touch beforehand. We're going to touch after. Like, you know.
With
guys, sure. you know, it's almost like, you know, I'll give them a touch beforehand just so they know, like, hey, this is work, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
There's respect there, at least a little bit, you know. Sure. Just so, because I feel like guys will come harder and I can't risk being hurt or anything like that just because of a moment of like emotion. You know what I mean? Of course.
Well, it gets an emotional thing, and that's what people don't realize. Yeah. That's why sometimes fights break out within a fight.
Yeah. And Rick is always there to keep everything under control. People don't act crazy at body shot. You know, they know what's up. I mean, Summer's made some guys puke and drop, you know, it gets crazy.
Okay. Let's see. Final fan question here. Kaylee Bright asks, you pitched at the White Sox.
Yeah.
Oh, you pitched at the White Sox last week. How much of a buzz was that? What other sports are you into away from boxing?
It was really cool going onto the field. And, like, you can kind of see yourself in the big screen, and you don't want to be like, oh, there's there's me. So I'm just kind of like looking out of the side of my eye, like, oh my gosh, this is really cool. But everybody kept saying, like, are you nervous? And it's like, no, I get punched in front of millions of people on TV. Like, nothing makes me nervous. But it was really cool going out on the field. And
did you make it over the plate?
I did. It was a little outside, but yeah, I definitely made it over the plate. We did some practice.
All right. I'm gonna go find a video of this.
I'm
gonna break your balls if it's not a good pitch.
It was decent. I did a good wind up, and then the Southpaw, the mascot, he threw on boxing trunks right before I go out.
Really?
It was insane.
Love it. That's great. Did the catcher catch it though?
It was a little outside. It was a little outside, Dave.
Okay. Rick's laughing. The catcher didn't catch it. Oh, at least you know. Look, you did it. That's good. You tried. Yeah. It made it over the plate. Yeah. Okay. Well, if it was over the plate, the catcher would have caught it.
It was over the vicinity of where the plate lies.
And on that note, we'll stick to boxing.
There we go.
Yes. Jessica, what a pleasure having you here. And I love seeing you fight.
Thank you.
What accolades, you know, undisputed welterweight champion of the world and two belts at super lightweight, and we can't wait to see you back live on DAZN. And of course, fans tune in this Saturday for the huge fight from Leeds,
yeah.
UK. And until then, we'll catch you at the next Matchroom Radio.
Yeah, sounds good.